Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of the Sightscreen Cricket Journal podcast. I'm your host, Tohid Qureshi, and today we're going to be taking a look back at the recently finished test series between South Africa and Bangladesh. In fact, it finished just under 24 hours ago, so it's all very fresh in my mind. And here with me to discuss the test series and indeed all things to do with Bangladesh cricket is someone who knows Bangladesh cricket inside out. Basically, if he doesn't know about it, it's really not worth knowing about it. It is ESPN Crick Info's Mohammed Issam. Welcome, Issam Bhai.
Thank you, Todd Bhai, for inviting me to the Sightscreen Cricket Journal podcast.
So it's great to have you on, Issam Bhai. I know, you know, you've been watching the test series very closely from Bangladesh and indeed reporting on it for ESPN Crick Info. So it's great to have you on and to get your insights on the series. I guess to begin with, good to get a sense of your sort of overall view of the series. I think from my point of view, it felt like a really big opportunity missed by Bangladesh for a couple of reasons. I guess primarily, you know, it's been a brilliant sort of start to 2022 for Bangladesh cricket, you know, winning that test match obviously in New Zealand, and then indeed winning the ODI series, which against South Africa before the test series began. So it felt like Bangladesh cricket was on a bit of a high, quite, you know, there was a bit of a feel-good factor, it seemed to me anyway. And then the second thing was that it, although I wouldn't say it's necessarily an understrength South Africa team, there were sort of certain key individuals missing for South Africa. So it seemed, if ever there was a time that Bangladesh would win a test in South Africa, this would be it. But it didn't happen. But yeah, just your overall reflections, I guess.
My overall reflections is something that you will recall from yesterday. I think you were in the press conference with Mominul Haque, where he was explaining to us the difference between overspin and side spin. I thought it was a ridiculous explanation, given how Bangladesh have grown up on wickets where the ball turns. I think the only difference between South African wickets in this series and general Bangladeshi wickets is the bounce. Okay, so there was a bit of pace in the wicket as well, which batsmen usually prefer, even if the ball is turning. I really didn't buy Mominul's explanation that this is the reason why they didn't do well. I mean, you cannot pinpoint it to that level and say that we missed that, because as a cricketer, you're trained in a certain way. And When you go abroad, which we are going to face alien conditions, and then you suddenly see, no, it's almost subcontinent conditions. You know, the wickets were a bit dry, and it was taking turn from second day, third day. I mean, that should have been it. I mean, as you were saying, that won the one-day series, they beat a team like New Zealand, you know, in New Zealand. They won that one-day series in South Africa. Now they get into the test series and they know that South Africa's frontline bowling attack is not in place. I mean, what else do you need? And then on top of that, you have wickets that are, you know, probably suiting you. I just felt that they were being so lazy in their mind that they assumed a lot of things would fall into place. Pieces of puzzle don't really fall into place in cricket, in a cricket match or in a cricket series. You have to do it. South Africa tried everything. South Africa tried very hard. And I think there was a huge difference in hunger between the two sides. I mean, even from a TV screen, I could see from miles away that the difference between the two sides was South Africa had a point to prove. They didn't have a full team. Dean Elgar and the rest of his team, Keshav Maharaj, they wanted to win. Bangladesh was sensing that they could just swim away and float away into a winning position. That never happens in test cricket, and certainly doesn't happen in South Africa. So I just felt that I was seeing one pretty lazy bunch of cricketers who had just had a one-day success. And mind you, the test team were practicing at the Gary Gerson Cricket Academy in Cape Town while this was happening. So you can't really say that, okay, they were in Dhaka practicing in slow, low wickets. No, the cricket board spent a lot of money to make sure that the test cricketers were in And Tohid Bhai, before they left, they chose Bogura as their training facility, because Bogura has a bit of bounce and a bit of seam in the wicket. So they were prepared for South Africa properly. They were given all the preparation. Now, I mean, the excuse could be that, oh, you should have prepared us on turning wickets. Now, that would be funny. But the point is that blaming it on overspin, backspin, side spin doesn't sound like a good cricketing explanation.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree with what you're saying there. And yeah, in terms of preparation, of course, you know, the other thing to note is that, you know, the coaching staff that they have on board, you know, it certainly in terms of, you know, in the bowling coach department, you know, having Alan Donald on board, if that doesn't give you, you know, the kind of preparation you need to kind of succeed on, you know, those sort of South African wickets, and, you know, nothing else does. So, yeah, it certainly seemed that in terms of preparation, there can't be any excuses. Just going back to the point that you were making about spin and, yeah, that press conference as well by Momenal at the end of the game yesterday, I think it was quite kind of remarkable for lots of reasons. You know, there are lots of kind of interesting things that he kind of ended up saying. It seemed to me that, you know, he obviously looked like someone with a bit of a scrambled mind. He looked very tired. And, you know, these are all, I have certain kind of sympathy with some of that because, you know, being a test captain isn't an easy job. Being test captain of Bangladesh is not an easy job. But yeah, he certainly seemed someone who looked a little bit defeated, someone with a scrambled mind. And yeah, the point he made about spin as well, I thought was quite extraordinary because, I mean, delving into this a little bit deeper, you know, my take on it is that actually, if you look at Bangladesh's test performances over kind of the last sort of 12 to 13 months, they've actually played spin really badly. So, you know, if you go back to the previous series, or sorry, the series against Pakistan at home, Sajid Khan basically spun Pakistan to victory in that second test. Before that, Pravin Jayawikrama in Sri Lanka in that second test spun Sri Lanka to victory. And even before that, you know, the likes of Rakeem Cornwall and Jameel Warrican in the second test there against West Indies back in Dhaka also won that test. And then even further back against Afghanistan in Chittagong, you know, is Rashid Khan and company, yeah, who kind of did the business there. So I feel to say that Bangladesh are good at playing spin itself is a bit of a fallacy.
I wouldn't agree. I think all of those examples you gave, I've seen all of those test matches up close, and my assessment, Tauhid Bhai, is let's go one by one. Let's start from Afghanistan in 2019. That was the start of a very strange period in Bangladesh cricket where we were not aware of a lot of things that were about to happen. Remember the test series. It just came off from a Sri Lanka tour where they were smashed, came here, and they just couldn't tolerate that the whole world around them were raving about Rashid Khan coming to play a test match in Bangladesh. And what happened next was that they took it overconfidently, that they wanted to smash Rashid Khan, and what happened? They got smashed themselves. Rashid Khan, I think, 12 wickets. Go to the West Indies series, there was way too much talk about West Indies being an understrength team. And the thing is, I mean, I've heard it from a few senior cricketers in Bangladesh a long time back, even a few years ago, as late as 2018, that when the media starts a trend or starts to talk about something, like say, for example, in 2018, when Bangladesh went to Dehradun to play 320s in Afghanistan, the media was talking about Rashid Khan, and someone from the Bangladesh team said, stop talking about Rashid Khan, because whatever you're saying, the younger players are bleeding. They're just taking on the hype and they're talking about Rashid. The same thing happened against West Indies. Bangladesh beat them very easily in the one-day series in Jan 2021, last year. And before you knew it, Kyle Myers had played that extraordinary knock. And when they came to Dhaka, their port of cricket, not the home of cricket, port of cricket, they basically thought, oh, yeah, we're going to smash them. I saw that test match. I think that was my first test match in the pandemic on the ground. It was unbelievably stupid how they played those spinners. Those spinners were very accurate. I'm not going to take that away from them. But accurate bowlers need to be dealt with a bit of patience. Bangladesh couldn't take the game deep. They cannot take games deep. I think that's more important. And you go to Sri Lanka, Jayawikrama. You go to New Zealand, Todd Astor. They cannot take any bowler deep. You have to the thing about test cricket is, or any longer format, 3-day game, 5-day game, 4-day game, you have to grind out the bowler. At one point, his shoulder starts to pain. The captain understands. He bowls a few short balls, and that's it. That's the end of his spell. You have to grind that out. With Jaya Vikrama, they tried to attack him because left-arm spin, where we are masters of left-arm spin. What masters? We are playing in a different condition where the wicket is slightly different. The bowler is slightly different. It's not that Bangladeshi players play left-arm spin really well at home in domestic cricket. That's why left-arm spinners get so many. I think there's a bit of a point that goes missing. That, oh, we play a lot of left-arm spinners. I say, yeah, but we play badly. Okay? We give them all the wickets. The top 10 wicket takers, you know that. You know, they all take wickets. Okay, now we go to after Sri Lanka. I think we had a long T20 break and then came Pakistan. Man, that test match in Dhaka, you were there, right?
I was there up until the third day. It was quite funny because I came home on the fourth day, and I was fully expecting it to be a draw because there was so much rain, but obviously that didn't happen.
That didn't happen, and if you remember the way they handled off spin, and again, not an innocuous bowler, an accurate bowler, without a lot of, you know, frills. He didn't have a dusra, a very visible dusra or a very cunning delivery. Just bowled up to the batsman. And these are like movements. And then, you know, in New Zealand, you know, they batted so well in difficult conditions. They made it their own conditions, Mount Maunganui. And strange. I mean, just coming back home against Afghanistan, they played well against Rashid for 2 matches. Okay, last match, Bangladesh lost. You know, that's okay. I think you don't even count that. They played well against him in that first T20. So they can play good spin. They can play world-class spin. They can handle spin. They can attack spin. But again, the last example I'm going to give, the last good example, Keshav Maharaj went for like 64 no loss, 64 no wickets in his 36 or 37 overs in the first test. First hit. You knew how to handle the guy. The only problem was Bangladesh have these pockets of, you know, like strange behavior. Like this, I asked Khaled Mahmood Shujon in one of the press conferences that why do they get so panicked when they have 10 overs to bat? They don't get panicked when they have 90 overs to bat. So these are mental blocks, though. I think more than the spinners, it's not the spinners. It's not the ball spinning in front of them. I think even if a spinner is like, look, Jomel Warrican and Rakim Cornwell weren't turning the ball a lot in midfield. They're bowling to the mind. I mean, a lot of these captains will tell you, and Dean Elgar actually alluded that Bangladesh needs to grow up. I think that was a very strong comment he made, and I think someone in Bangladesh should take this that, yeah, we cannot complain about it. We just cannot go to another country and we don't can we expect them not to sledge? Of course there's going to be sledge. Of course. And honestly, if you go to the press conference and say that they've abused us, stand by. Don't go to the next press conference and say, no, I didn't say that. You know?
Absolutely.
My point, again, coming back to my first, so just at 14 wickets in 2/4 innings, Keshav Maharaj, and 20 wickets gone to the spinners. I think even Keshav Maharaj and Simon Harmer at times look like they're just tossing up deliveries. And yesterday, I think the biggest example was how someone has so good in form, Litton Das, missed the ball by a foot. Just tell me how that happens. You know? Just the mind game.
Yeah, no, I take on board a lot of that. And I think, yeah, if you look at both of those kind of fourth innings kind of batting displays, well, you can't really call them batting displays. I say collapses, both 53 and 80, not, 53 all out and 80 all out. I think if you look at both of those innings in isolation, then yeah, I kind of see where you're coming from in terms of it being much more about mental application rather than, any kind of sort of technical issues as such when facing the spinning ball. But yeah, lots of points you've raised there, which I want to come on to. Where to begin? Well, let's go back and look at the first test in a bit more detail, maybe. So obviously, Bangladesh ended up kind of losing the test by 220 runs in the end, but actually, They put up a pretty good fight for most of 4 days. There was a first innings deficit in the end of 69 runs, I think, and that Bangladesh first innings total was kind of built around a maiden century from Mahmudul Hasan Joy, which was kind of a rare bright spot. But then obviously he kind of bagged a pair in that second test, which kind of took the gloss off of his performance on the tour. But actually, I felt, you know, if you look at the bowling during that first test, you know, they took 20 wickets. I think Miraz bowled, a marathon 75 overs across that test match. And, you know, I thought he actually bowled really, really well because he was performing multiple roles. We know that Tuskin got injured. So, you know, Miraz was performing multiple roles in terms of, you know, trying to attack at some stages as well as, you know, trying to hold up an end and rotating Khaled and Ebadot at the other end. So I thought he did fantastically well. And actually, I think the fact that he bowled so many overs in that first test had an impact on his performance in the second test, where he looked certainly a bit more subdued. But I thought, as most people do, I think that, you know, Bangladesh actually played pretty well in that first test up until those 4 days. But then, it was all about that batting collapse and the capitulation. And, you know, my take on it is that, you know, being behind in the game for 4 days takes its toll. You know, being constantly chasing the game isn't an easy thing to do, and it kind of catches up with you. And I guess, you know, that's kind of what happened in that last innings of 53 all out. But yeah, what's your take on that first test?
I mean, that test match, I was quite excited about the way they bowled on the first day. They're very, very tight, Khaled, Tuskin and Ebadot. I have very low expectations of Ebadot, honestly. But I think he always has that extra yard of pace, and he has that attitude. I think that's the thing about him. But then you have Khaled. You know, none of us had any sort of expectations from him. But because Shoriful wasn't around, he bowled pretty well. And, you know, in South Africa, they have a very patient batting lineup. And to keep them to 367, I thought it was a great job. And then for 298, you know, it was, they could have made up more runs. I mean, you always think that they could have done more. But I think 298 wasn't still bad. 69 runs behind. Expectations were rising. I mean, and then the way the bowlers came back, unbelievable second innings. I mean, we don't talk about it enough. And that was one of the big regrets for me after the first test, that because of that collapse in the fourth innings, we didn't talk about how well all of them bowled. Tuskin bowled with an injury for 11 overs. As you mentioned, the way Miraz bowled that second innings, 35 overs, unbelievable. And Ebadot bowled very well. Khaled bowled very well in that test match. I think that should have been the kickoff point that we're going to win this test match. And, you know, it starts from small things. I mean, that last session, there was a lot of sledging. People surrounded Joy. Joy has to understand that this is going to happen to him all the time. If he's going to, if he wants to be a one-hit wonder, okay, have fun. Please play Dhaka Premier League and have fun. But if you want to be a really great test opener, you know, Dean Elgar must have gone through hell and back against South Africa, against Australia, I'm sorry, in 2018. And Graham Smith said that he almost cried when Matthew Hayden was abusing. That's the whole point of it. You know, you say it like 10 years later in your memoir, you're going to say that this happened, that happened. Write it down in a diary. You know, go and see a therapist if you have to. Talk to your captain. Talk to your coach. You have 3 head coaches in the talk to them. You have so many board directors there. Talk to them. Don't complain. Don't come and tell us that they're sledging. Yeah, they are going to be sledging. They're going to be doing things with the ball. They're going to manipulate a lot of things, because don't forget that you're playing in their backyard, very proud nation of rugby and cricket. They don't want to lose to Bangladesh. They have already lost the one-day series. You think that was easy for them? Just imagine Oman or Qatar coming to Bangladesh. Honestly, that's how the gap was between Bangladesh and South Africa as a test playing nation, honestly. Because, you know, in terms of rankings too. So, say Nepal comes to Bangladesh, beat us in a one-day series. You think we're going to take it lightly? You think Bangladesh Cricket Board is going to take it lightly? I don't think so. So, in that first test match, I thought the way they bowled, you know, you take inspiration from that. Take inspiration from someone like Tuskin. The guy has a shoulder, grits his teeth, takes a painkiller, bowls 11 overs. You look at him and you think that, oh, if he's going to do that, I'm going to better him. I'm going to he has done a Anil Kumble for us. Anil Kumble played with a broken jaw. Rahul Dravid played with another injury. And great examples of it. You have that in your team. And another, I think, a major motivation should have been Tamim Shakib is not in the team. We're going to do it again. We keep doing it. This cricket board is going to trust us. And, you know, they're going to keep us in the team. Because when Tamim comes back, obviously there's not going to be any place for Shadman. When Shakib comes back, I don't think we're going to see Yasir whenever Shakib comes back. My point is that that test match was a lost opportunity. As you said right up at the start of the podcast, that this whole series was a lost opportunity because you don't get these chances. 74 chase, you know, just take a shot. You know, get bowled out for 180, not 53. Come on. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely agree. And yeah, agree in what you were saying about that South Africa's second innings bowling performance by Bangladesh. And yeah, I know Alan Donald at the end of that first test as well was saying that that was the first time that Bangladesh's attack bowled as a proper unit, i.e. all four of those bowlers at different times, all looked threatening, all were kind of performing specific roles at particular times, which was good to see. But as you say, it all kind of got overshadowed. Well, all got completely overshadowed in the end because of that 53 all out. The Bangladesh team were obviously aggrieved at some of the umpiring decisions. And, you know, I know they've lodged a complaint, I think, at the end of that first test to the ICC. I have no idea what the outcome of that lodging that complaint has been. But obviously they were quite aggrieved because of umpiring decisions that went against them. I think there were a total of 8 decisions in the end that were overturned on review, and maybe like a couple of others that weren't reviewed that would have been overturned. So I think they were quite aggrieved by that. And I think, you know, that sense of injustice kind of spilt over in terms of, you know, complaining against the sledging. I don't know. Yeah, that was kind of my take on it. But whatever the case, yeah, it seemed to be a very sort of strange stance to take. And the strangest thing about it as well, I think, was a few days later when actually your colleague from ESPN Cricket Info, Firdous, asked Momin Ul Haq about, you know, the kind of the sledging allegations, and he basically flatly denied it. He said, no, I think you guys have got the wrong end of the stick. You know, we never said that there was too much sledging. So, yeah, it was all rather strange, I guess.
Yeah, about the umpiring. I mean, the 8 that we talk about, obviously, we have to remember that South Africa got 4 of those overturned and Bangladesh got 4. So the umpiring wasn't good. And then, again, very human. It can happen. But with the way the world goes these days, I mean, you cannot also deny the fact that, you know, nationalism and all these things come into, because you're playing a national sport at an international level. Now, I'm sure if the same thing happened in Bangladesh, there would be the same hue and cry. And because of the standard of umpiring in Bangladesh, it would have been worse. That this is seen, and we've also documented how bad the umpiring is in domestic cricket in Bangladesh, how horrible it is. So we don't know about that in South Africa. And generally, South Africa, you know, there are a few question marks because Virat Kohli raised a few points during that India series. And that lingered on when the umpiring wasn't up to the mark in this test series. I honestly think that if you have a problem with umpiring, you know, do it diplomatically, do it in the ICC table, do it in meetings. You know, there are ways to do it. And already the ICC have announced that from next year, I think they're going to allow neutral umpires, obviously. And take it with a pinch of salt, because you, when you're facing a team, as I said, they're a very proud nation, they want to win, few things go against you. You know, you have to ride with that sometimes. And just, okay, let's. Still, Bangladesh went into a good position despite all of it. You know, they would have been in a better position, 118, as I think Khalid Mahmood said, chasing 180, not 250. I would say they were, if the decisions, especially one of those, which didn't go to review because Bangladesh didn't, not, the umpire is not giving them out. So that would have been about 40 runs. So, you know, of course, you can talk about it. Of course, you can complain about it. But, you know, when you do it and then you get bowled out for 53 and, you know, it doesn't really have that sting. You know, your cricket should have that reflection of what you're trying to say. It's been the case. It's historical. I mean, I've heard stories of umpiring in Sri Lanka when Pakistan toured in the 80s. Obviously, we as kids, we know that in India, there was always that thing about home umpires. In Pakistan, Australia complained they wanted to get off the 88 tour. There were so many incidents.
Before we move on, I will talk about the second test. But one thing I think we have to address in terms of that first test as well, happened right at the start of the game at the toss. So, you know, the decision that Mominal took. So Bangladesh won the toss, he called correctly, but rather than choosing to bat, he chose to bowl. And, you know, this caused a bit of a stir. And part of me thinks that, you know, hindsight is a great thing, you know, after winning a toss and, you know, choosing not to bat, i.e. choosing to bowl, and you see the opposition racking up a load of runs at the end of the first day, then, you know, that's never a good thing. But part of me thinks that sometimes it's to do with hindsight in terms of the criticism that people get about that. But I think in this instance, actually, just going back to that, you know, Nazir Hussain, I think, famously inserted Australia, I can't remember where it was, and they ended up racking sort of over 300 runs at the end of the first day. So it certainly happens. But I think in this case, what interested me was at the end of the day's play, when Russell Domingo was talking, it very much sounded like his opinion was that Bangladesh should have batted, but it seemed that he was actually overruled by, you know, senior players, perhaps by team management. And, you know, obviously that points to quite a conservative approach in the end in terms of not batting to protect what they feel is quite a fragile kind of batting lineup. And again, I guess my take on it is that it kind of sometimes becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So the more you say that, you know, you're trying to protect a fragile batting lineup, the more fragile it becomes, because, you know, you're kind of sending out the wrong signal, if you like. But yeah, what's your view on that call at the toss?
I completely agree with you when you say that a fragile, you just doubling down on something just makes it worse, obviously. And I think that statement from Russell Domingo was a curious one, because I think what it sent out was that the batsmen are scared. Bangladesh always goes defensive with their batsmen. They take seven batsmen. They don't bat first in tests abroad. South Africa, interestingly, except the last test in Port Elizabeth, I can't pronounce it, I'm really sorry. Apologies. But except for the last test match, they have won all the tosses in test matches in South Africa since 2002. I don't know whether you know that. They've always won the toss. From 2002, four tosses they won. 8, 17, this series, the first one. So you have seven test matches, they won the toss. They always lost the test match. Sometimes, I think they batted twice, batted first twice, and batted, fielded first five times. They always field first. Trend. It's a trend, and of course, they should have taken the local knowledge of Donald and Russell Domingo. I think that's where they made the mistake. I don't know who takes that decision, but I'll tell you something, Toyboy. You have the word Sidescreen Cricket Journal next to you. Anything that comes out of Sidescreen Cricket Journal is your responsibility, right? Your responsibility. And
yeah.
Some story comes out in Cricket Info on Bangladesh. So everyone knows, you know, that Issam is responsible. The name is written next to you. When your name is Mominul Haq and there's a bracket and says captain, I'm sorry, you cannot pinpoint or nudge towards the seniors, the coaching staff, the cricket board. If you are the captain, take responsibility. You cannot take the responsibility. You tell them that, look, you are all taking decisions in my place. Relieve me of this, number one. And if you have the guts, please tell them, give me the responsibility. You have given me the name, you have given me the post. Let me decide that for some purpose. I am assuming Mominul decided. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. That's where Bangladesh cricket goes wrong. That's where I, as someone who's been covering cricket for 15, 16 years, I cannot confidently tell you, Tohit, that Mominul took this decision, or Mominul takes any decision on his own off the field. Selection, toss, strategy. It's a mayhem, it's a chaos. Even when Mashrafi was captain, Mashrafi was by far the strongest leader Bangladesh ever. He has had to go through sessions in England during the Championship in 2017, in the World Cup 2019. He had to sit through meetings where cricket board directors would tell him what to do. Quietly. Sit quietly and listen to them. know, that's how demeaning it is in Bangladesh. And honestly, I was telling this other journalist earlier today that, I mean, he wanted to know how many matches has Mominul kept in the domestic cricket. And I was like, I can't remember. I mean, could be a few games for Ghazi Group, maybe one or two games for Chittagong in the National League. But I said, look, it doesn't really matter if he captained in local cricket or not, because in local cricket, captains really don't matter. The coach matters, the club official matters. So sad. I'm very sad. Because the really sad part is that. But, you know, that's how the culture is here. The captain, unless you're a Mashraf, you're a Saqib or a Tamim, or maybe if you're a Mahmudullah, you know, might matter. But in Bangladesh's wider context is, you know, doesn't really matter. Unfortunately, it doesn't at all matter. And I just feel bad for Mominul. Damn good cricketer, fantastic batsman, scores hundreds left and right. Whenever he plays, he's scoring runs all the time.
I've always kind of viewed Mominul, I think I've called him this as well, like the accidental captain. You know, he's not there because of any particular kind of skill or talent that he has for captaincy. It's purely, I think, because there's no one else. Well, there was no one else, like you say, back in 2019 to take the job on. And yeah, I guess the hope has always been that he would kind of evolve or develop into the role. So yeah, I guess he's been captain almost 3 years now. And to me, yeah, it doesn't look like there's been an awful lot of development in terms of his captaincy and kind of understanding what that role entails and, you know, everything that goes with it in terms of strategy and tactics. You know, there was one telling moment, I think it was in the South Africa first innings at the second test, or maybe it was the second innings, but I can't remember who the bowler, I think it might have been Tijal was bowling. There were only two slips in place, or maybe it was one of the fast bowlers. I can't quite remember. But Alan Donald. Khaled was bowling. He had two slips, but he was bowling really well. Yeah. And, you know, he's threatening the batsman's outside edge quite regularly. And, you know, Donald for about, I don't know, 10 minutes on the sideline was just signalling free, as in get a third slip in. And eventually he had to come down to the boundary edge, speak to Mushfiqur and get him to relay the message in terms of that decision. So yeah, he's certainly someone who kind of lacks in that department. But yeah, I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, do you see any changes in captaincy ahead of the next series against Sri Lanka, which happens only in kind of 4 weeks' time, I guess?
You know, Tohid Bhai, I wouldn't count that out, because there's a bit of time now for people to think if they want to consider it, and there is going to be a lot of talk about it. I just hope that the BCB doesn't see it as an ego battle with the players, because I honestly feel that Tamim has the ambition to score a lot of runs in Test cricket. He wants to lengthen his career in Tests and ODIs. And he has proven that he can handle the ODI team very well. Actually, he handles the team quite well. He has that ability. Yes, a different set of abilities. Not like Mashrafi. It's very different. He has a different sort of sense of humor. A very different way of looking at things. I think he's the right choice, and he's committed to Test cricket. He's committed to one-day cricket. He's not committed to T20 international cricket, which frees him up for part of the year after the Sri Lanka series. I think his focus will slowly go into T20 World Cup. So I think if you give him the responsibility, and he's very smart in the way that he can you know, compartmentalize the things, the format. So when the T20 was going on, he was doing his thing. He was planning himself what to do against Afghanistan, because that was his next target. He missed all those series because of injury. Completely understand that. He planned ahead what pitches to play on. You know, I have not ever seen Bangladesh play all three ODIs in Chittagong. But there was a specific reason to do that, because he knew that Zahid Reza Babu, curator, and the Indian curator there, forgot his name, they could deliver him the pitches they need to negate Afghanistan spinners. Afghanistan spoke every day that, you know, you can't really spin on this way. That was Tamim's plan. That was how he planned that Shakib and all they can bowl on slightly non-turning wickets, but Afghan spinners. So my point being, I think yeah, there should be a thought, and Tamim should be in the forefront.
Yeah, I'm sure he will be certainly one of the names in the frame. And yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens in the next few weeks regarding the captaincy. So let's move on then to the second test. And, you know, I guess for me, I'll come on to my main talking point, I guess. But I guess my general view on this was that, you know, Bangladesh, again, were always chasing the game. South Africa won the toss. As you said, they were very successful in winning the toss at home. They won the toss. They chose to bat, racked up 453 runs. No one scoring a century, which was quite interesting. But, lots of good performances by the top order in the South Africa team. Dean Elgar leading the way with 70 runs. And then, Keshav Maharaj, who... you know, had a series to really remember, came in and scored 84, batting at number 8, I think it was. That obviously set up their total of 453. And in reply, Bangladesh kind of folded to 217 in the end. There were only kind of two partnerships of note, I guess. That was when Tamim was batting with Shantu, and also there was a partnership between Mushfika and Yasir Ali. And that's kind of the talking point I wanted to come to. I think you might maybe know what I'm going to get at. And that is about kind of Mushfika Rahim's reverse sweep, or decision to reverse sweep. And I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit, because I've got a real soft spot for Mushfika Rahim. I think he's such a kind of a model professional. He's played for Bangladesh, 15 years now. His test debut, I was there in 2005 at Lord's. So, you know, he's been around for so long, and just his longevity in itself is something I think that should be celebrated. But obviously he has a tendency in very high profile situations to kind of commit errors or mistakes. And for me, I feel sometimes that those kind of high profile errors, such as reverse sweeping 10 minutes before lunch when you've just got to 50 and, you know, your team is just looking to play out up until lunch and you know, not lose any wickets. So yeah, I feel sometimes that his kind of high profile errors overshadow his achievements as a cricketer over so many years for Bangladesh. What was your view on that reverse sweep 10 minutes before lunch, just when they were looking to sort of play out time?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting one. I mean, what do you think? Someone who's played 80 test matches, said longevity.
I guess the other thing that I would say about the reverse sweep, it's all about risk and reward, isn't it? And I think the other thing when we kind of criticise Mushfika for his shot selection sometimes is that we don't always remember how many runs that shot has actually produced. So I guess it's about risk and reward. And I guess, yeah, maybe there's a tipping point that's arrived where that shot becomes more of a risk than the reward.
So I checked out our internal data and all those things about his shot. It doesn't really bring him a lot of success, especially in the last 2 years. 15 months, he's played it, I think, 18 times, and he's connected with two boundaries in all formats. He's got out in high-profile manner. Against Rakim Cornwall, he played and the ball went to cover. He played, I think, once in the Sri Lanka series. He got out on 84. Then he played one in the T20 World Cup to Liam Livingstone. And it looked horrible, all of those. And that's the whole thing, Rohit Bhai. It looks terrible. It doesn't look like a professional who's played 80 test matches or 300 international matches. At a critical time, he plays that shot. I am 100% sure that he plays that shot knowing that it'll hurt the bowler, doing something, change the field. He does it because he's experienced. Now, it doesn't come off all the time. You have to have that balance between that, you know, you can have arrogance. I don't mind arrogance. I don't mind a bit of arrogance in a kid or in a senior player who's done the job, knows that, yeah, I'm good enough. That's okay. But when you are seeing that it's not working, especially in high-profile moments, you have to have that lack of ego as well. You think that, well, if it's not happening, let me just shelve it for a while. Great cricketers like Steve Waugh, Mark Waugh, they didn't play the bat for a long time. You know, Sachin Tendulkar scored a test 100 without a cover drive. You think that didn't hurt him? It was in a SCG test match. Steve Waugh's last test. You think that doesn't hurt him? You think that was an easy period for him? I read in John Wright's book that he actually came to John Wright's room and said, it's not happening for me. Not being able to play the cover drive, the god of cricket. You know, there are bigger cricketers than Mushfiq who have made bigger sacrifices in their cricket. You know, Viv Richards had to wear a helmet in his last test match. Viv Richardson had to wear a helmet. You think that sat well with them? You know, no. So playing a reverse sweep, you know, I should take notes on what I'm saying to you. Because it's a very good sounding. I can do a piece on this. No, but I honestly think that he's a very hardworking cricketer. He's a legend in Bangladesh. But even a legend, problem is in this age, the higher you go, the harder the fall. And at the same time, Pommy Mbang was saying something very interesting in commentary about the reverse sweep yesterday, actually, that you want to play the reverse sweep, what? To baffle the bowler, change the field. But if you just played for a single, or just to beat a fielder, there's no point. If the same field stays and the bowler doesn't change, he's not going to change his angle. What's the point of playing that shot? You know, it's also the same with paddle sweeps and all those nudges and nurdles that started to come up through the 1980s and 90s. Every commentator, every senior cricketer, former cricketer will say, what's the point of playing that shot? Then you have someone like a Kevin Peterson or an Ashraf Ul or a Doug Marillier plays that switch hit and just changes the game. Then, okay, I'm going to hit a six with it. Then Maxwell comes and starts to hit block sweeps, you know, reverse sweeps. So unless you do that, Mushfiq plays a great panel. I think Mushfiq's paddle is brilliant. Mushfiq plays a great reverse pull. Maybe there's something there. Maybe there's a technical problem. He should look into it, not take it as an ego. Last May, he said, I'll play 4 and 5 in every match. Come on. I mean, you're a senior cricketer. You must have that balance. So I'm going to take this audio from you, Mohit Bhai, and I'm going to write a piece on it.
Please do. Yeah, please do. Yeah. I look forward to reading it. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree with what you say. I think the fact that it just looks really bad is kind of the main thing there, because, you know, there's many ways of getting out, as we know. And yeah, getting out, playing the reverse sweep, either LBW or bowled or caught somewhere is never going to be a good look. And just to finish off on the point, one kind of, I don't know if it's a comparison, but it's an interesting point, I think, is that, you know, we saw Tamim also get out in that first innings. Actually, he got out in both innings in quite similar way, you know, falling over to his head, falling over to the offside, beaten by a ball coming in on the angle, kind of aimed at his legs, out LBW, particularly in that first innings. You know, he was kind of falling over. And again, that's kind of a technical deficiency or a technical issue. I'm sure he's addressed it. I'm sure he's looked into it. But it's something that's kind of still in his game. And so, you know, he got out, you know, in that way, in that first innings. Yet, you know, the criticism compared to Mushfiqur's reverse sweep is quite stark, I think.
Yeah, I think it's also the, as you said right at the start of this question, very, very visual. Tamim falling over to Fazal Haq Farooqi 3 times, getting out to him. The way he reacted to it was like, yeah, I'm going to fix it. Don't worry about it. You know, that's also important, how you address it and how you, and the journalists follow a lot of things. We nowadays, I don't know whether you've noticed, I think you've seen that on training days, they have all these Facebook pages, they shoot the training sessions. And there you could see he was working on Jamie, with Jamie on that problem. Then Jamie comes out and says, I'm going to fix this problem. Then Tamim gets out thrice. Tamim says, I'm going to fix this problem. Then plays well, tries to get his foot out of the way. Then he still gets out in that way. The point is, he's trying to improve on that. Mushfiq plays a vanity shot, I think. Sorry, I shouldn't say that. But it's a very ego shot. I think it's a very, even if you just take everything out of the equation, it's him against the bowlers. Tamim has a very technical problem. I think Mushfiq has a mental issue with the shot. So I think there's a bit of difference there. And everything is being criticized here. I think I think if Shakib comes up with a problem and he mentions it to someone, everyone is going to criticize him for that. But the point is, that's also very courageous of Tamim to come out and say, well, there's a problem, I'm going to fix it. You know, everyone has done that in their career. I think it's also the way it's being perceived. You know, if Mushfiq had said that, yeah, there's a problem, I'm gonna start being a little more careful with it, that changes the perception. You know, it's all about PR, man. It's all about how you, even in that shot, even a shot has a PR problem, I think.
Absolutely, it certainly does. Okay, I'm gonna wind things on then before wrapping up. I mean, it's been a fascinating conversation, but just to roll things forward to a few weeks' time in that Sri Lanka test, which is obviously back home in Bangladesh, test in Chittagong and a test in Dhaka. Obviously, very different conditions compared to what the Bangladesh tour team have experienced in South Africa. I mean, what kind of changes do you see in terms of team personnel going into that series? Obviously, there were a few injuries to Shorafal, who didn't take part in the test series. Tuskin obviously only played in the one test. Shakib missed the series because of personal reasons. I mean, what changes do you see, either in terms of players being dropped or rested? I mean, Shadman, I think, yeah, potentially may or may not play in that series, depending on how the selectors go with things. But yeah, what's your view?
Bye-bye, just one name, Shakib. I don't think there's any need for any change. I would love to see Tuskin bowl, but I don't know what sort of pitches they can come up with in May, because May is an off-season, start of the off-season. So there have been a lot of cricket in Dhaka and Chittagong. So pitches will be wary, even if they try to make it not... Even if they try to make it better in Chittagong, Dhaka would be impossible, because you'll have Dhaka Premier League right up to that test match. So, honestly, spin-based. Hopefully, this doesn't go into play into Sri Lanka's hand like they did in 2018. Shakib has to come back. Shakib coming back, this team changes. Tamim, Shakib in the lineup, Mushfiq in the lineup, it makes a lot of difference. So, I would like to see Tamim as the captain. I'd like to see Shakib come back in the middle order. I would love to see Yasir make a place for himself, fight for a place for himself. You know, that's how it should be. I mean, that's how these things change. I mean, I kind of have a bit of doubt on Nazmul Hasan Shanto, but I think he's being groomed for bigger roles. He's got to score some runs. Tamim, Joy open. Shanto will bat at 3, Nul 4, and I hope Shakib is at 5. We have Litton, Shfiq. Then you have the four brothers. I think Shakib has to come back. Shakib has to play these two. Otherwise, it's going to be fair enough.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And obviously, if Shakib does come back, then it is kind of, like you say, it's unfortunate for Yasir Ali, because, you know, he's the most obvious person batting solo down the order to be replaced by Shakib. But yeah, interesting what you say. It'd be good to see Yasir fight for a place in that sort of top six, because I think, you know, he was one of the few bright spots during that tour of South Africa. And also another name, I think, whose kind of stock rose during that tour would be Khalid Ahmed. Because, you know, he's someone we've not really seen. I mean, I can't remember him playing two tests in a row at all during his career. I don't think he has, right? So, yeah, it was really interesting watching him kind of develop actually through the course of that test series. And yeah, he's someone who had a good tour, and it'd be good to see him. I don't know if we'll see him back in Bangladesh or not, certainly if the likes of Tuskin, Shorafal are fully fit. Thank you for listening to episode 28 of the Sightscreen Cricket Journal podcast with Mohammed Issam. Please do leave a rating wherever you download your podcasts from. Please also check out the new and improved website. The address is www.sightscreencj.com. Do also check out the YouTube channel and the Twitter handle @sightscreencj. Until next time, bye for now.